Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The View from Here on KGBM 95.9 FM in Bozeman, Montana, serving the Gallatin Valley. I'm your co-host, Jeff Milchin.
And I'm Steve Kirchhoff.
And this week we are welcoming Elizabeth Merrim. Elizabeth is a Belgrade resident and board chair of the Gallatin County Democrats.
Woohoo!
She also serves as a program coordinator for TRIO Student Support Services at Montana State University, a program that helps students of limited means who experience a disability or who are the first generation of their family to attend and graduate college. The program makes connections throughout the university community to help assure their success and timely graduation. Elizabeth previously has worked as a community organizer with the Montana Organizing Project and many other Montana organizations. She also serves on the planning board for the Belgrade City and County and on the County Planning Coordinator Committee. So today we're going to talk a lot about politics, but would like to start off, get just a quick introduction about the work that you're doing up at Montana State University, Elizabeth. So first of all, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here, and I truly appreciate the work of KGBM.
Well, please, I think the TRIO program at MSU is relatively little known in the community, okay. So I think it'd be interesting to hear just how you go about supporting students, who are the students you're serving, and what are the outcomes that you try to achieve?
The TRIO Student Support Services is not unique. It's across the nation. TRIO was a program instituted in 1965 as part of the War on Poverty. It's federally funded through the Department of Education. We just got re-granted for another 5 years.
And wonderful.
We were informed of that last Friday.
Congratulations.
And that's a good thing. And we serve students, as you said, with 150% or less than federal poverty. People who are first generation to college. Neither one of their parents have graduated college by the time they turn 18. Or students with a disability. So this is a unique group of students. They're wonderful, wonderful students, and they work really hard.
About how many are there at MSU right now, would you say?
Oh, a third are first gen, but you know, people apply for TRIO. The application is online, and at the end of next week, we're cutting off applications for the year. So we keep a cohort. It's really about 175, but we report on 150. And the goal is graduation within 6 years. Now, students come from all over the United States, so they don't have to be in-state students. But we do get a lot of transfers from, say, for instance, two-year colleges, tribal colleges. So we have a lot of students who are coming in with skills that are not as honed and backgrounds that are not as attuned to higher education as perhaps their peers. We got a lot of non-traditional students, single parents, people that live in family graduate housing. Housing is a challenge. Everything's a challenge. But getting through college is the key for enduring success. And our goal is to help them make that leap into a successful graduation and a successful career.
That's fantastic. That's a great program.
Yeah, they're great students. I love them dearly.
Yeah. They are lovable.
They are.
Until they turn in their first essay.
Oh, you go to the Writing Center. You tell everyone, go to the Writing Center. You're going to look smarter if you get these helps.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
So how do you go about assessing the success of the program? I mean, do you have kind of background comparisons for comparable students without this kind of support system? And do you have target?
Well, university has the Office of Planning and Analysis, and they do all kinds of studies and demographics and stuff like that. We are, we're the people that hook them up with services.
Mm-hmm.
Your roommate is terrible and your landlord is ready to throw you out. Okay, there's this service. There's CrashPad at the university that can put you up. We don't want you to be homeless. You don't have food for your family, and there's Bounty of the Bridgers, and then there's the Gallatin Valley Food Bank. Your car quit. Well, we all have our favorite mechanics, and I happen to have bought a couple of cars that were rebuilt salvage, so, you know, I just send them over to my my friend that fixes up beaters. So, you know, it's patching life together to get on a level playing field, and then rising up from there to you know, goals perhaps beyond their imagination, and making sure that they know that we're working for them. We're working for them, and the university is there to serve them, not the other way around.
Mm-hmm. And how has your job changed working with these students in COVID times? Has it become...
Oh, it's hard. 'Cause they don't come in, and you know what it's like when someone ghosts you. You just kind of feel a little bit ghosted. So you're not seeing them as much. You're not connecting. You don't hear about their kids or the problems with family or housing or some sort of security, the challenges of a group project, the challenges of a professor that's not responding, etc. Or you know about services that the university has within it, resources that could help them, but you're not able to lift that up and bring it to their awareness and say, hey, go talk to legal. It's $10. You know? Mm-hmm. They'll take your whole case.
Mm-hmm. So not being able to be face-to-face with these students has put a bigger obstacle between them and the services that they could profit from.
Yeah, because we don't know what they need until they tell us a lot of times.
Right. So you mentioned students with kids. I think, you know, when people in the community think about MSU, they think about teenagers or people in their young 20s. Give us a sense of the diversity of, you know, the age and life circumstances, the folks that you work with, if you could.
We work with probably one of the most diverse groups of students because, you know, we have diverse racially, gender-wise, age-wise, background-wise. We have students that are veterans and then students that are transgender. It's pretty broad. It's really broad. And it's safe space for everyone as long as they're respectful to others. So it's safe space. You could talk about anything you want to as long as it's respectful.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in Bozeman, you can walk around a lot of parts of the city and not see people other than white for days at a time. And it's obviously a very different story on campus, but what can you tell us about how it feels for a lot of students of color coming into the community? Does it feel, from what you hear, welcoming to folks beyond the university community, or are there problems out there that we should be addressing?
I always ask. And I really try to listen. They do have challenges. Our director is a black man. We have a small staff. It's only three of us. And then a couple of work-study students that help us. We're open to hearing, helping, and advising students with ways to navigate the university, the community, relationships with other people, and... if I don't know the answer, I send in my director, because his experience as an African-American man is totally different than mine. I don't understand that because I got this white skin, and I don't know what it's like to live in that body. But I know that he knows, and he's done it for his life, and he's had his own challenges. I don't pretend to know.
Good. And is there anything else that, you know, folks out there in the community in Gallatin County, you know, might want to know about this program and what goes on at MS?
I think the high school counselors need to be more aware of it. There's feeder programs for TRIO student support. TRIO started as a few programs, now it's a bunch. So there's feeder programs that go from middle school to high school and then to college. And these really nurture students of low means to help bright and promising students be probably, well, a lot more prepared, but a lot better students than they thought was possible. And but we don't have those programs. They have them in Missoula. They have them in Helena, Butte, Anaconda, Billings, but not. Our program took kind of a hiatus for a while because it didn't get re-granted. Mm-hmm. Now we're back and we're strong and we can perhaps do that. TRIO Student Support Services for Veterans programs into the middle school and high school, but that's going to take a while. It's going to take a while.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone out there was interested in learning more, getting involved, how would they do that?
Montana.edu/TRIO SSS.
All right.
There you go.
Wonderful.
TRIO Student Support Services.
It's a great program.
Anything you want to add on that topic, Steve, to ask Elizabeth?
I think that the TRIO program is a wonderful thing, and particularly for Montana students. I teach a lot of freshmen, and over the years, I've noticed what you're talking about is coming in a little bit underskilled, undertrained, coming in maybe not as fully equipped as they could be, or maybe even should be, because they have more potential than has been tapped from them previously. And so a service like TRIO, which provides that support and gives them a comfort and orients them to the campus, can only go a long way toward making them just more capable, more competent, because they can pick up and they can move ahead if they're given the right, you know, support services. So I think programs like TRIO and programs like the Native American support that is given up on campus, they're tremendous. And you can see the gap being narrowed between students who come in challenged and those who come in with greater advantages and privileges. That gap can be narrowed in a year or two, it seems. I've noticed that with my students when I see them as freshmen, then I might see them again as juniors and seniors, and it's a world of difference in their confidence, in their bearing, in their abilities academically and personally. So that's a wonderful program. I'm so glad you're doing it.
Yeah, these guys have street smart. The academic types don't have the same kind of, don't always have the same kind of intelligence. It's this and rather than either or.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. Good for you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Great. So as far as your work goes with the Gallatin County Democrat serving as the chair of the board of directors there, give listeners a sense of what the organization does, obviously beyond trying to elect Democrats, I assume is a primary goal, but what's the role of these county organizations within the state and the state party structure? And is this a group that, does every part of Montana have a group like yours serving it?
Well, ours is the best.
Well,
I'm glad you asked that.
Well, we are mighty lucky to have you here.
Well, I'm mighty lucky to have a great leadership team and just the wonderful volunteers that we have. So the county parties are kind of like the smallest structure of government. We're elected to precinct women and men to represent our precincts. Generally, there are several precincts, 3 to 4 per house district. Each house district is 2 house district to a Senate district. There's 50 Senate districts in the state, 100 house districts. So it's the smallest unit of elected government, and it's a volunteer position. So all of us work as volunteers. Some of us are working, especially in large election years like this, a lot. But we're totally reliant on volunteer effort to keep us going. Every county can have or might have a county committee. In large cities, it's kind of funny, it's like a vie for a position. In Montana, you're struggling to build leadership. I think that it varies widely. You can tell that the large urban centers have pretty varying levels of sophisticated county central committees, but the smaller communities, it's really bare bones. And it's because population. You know,
sure.
Dillon. Small. Eastern Montana, small. They might not have a Democratic Central Committee. They probably have a Republican one. The Republican ones are probably vied for because in some ways maybe it gives you status. Or maybe not. You know.
Where's the chair of the Galton County Republicans this morning, Jeff?
I actually was going to note that we did invite the Galton County Republicans to have a representative on the show today, and we did not hear back from them. That invitation will remain open, but certainly KGVM is a nonpartisan entity, and we're an open mouthpiece for all political views. So we hope that'll happen in the near future, although it didn't today. So, Elizabeth, we've had divided state government for at least the past 16 years in Montana, I believe, with a Republican-controlled legislature and Democratic governors, Brian Schweitzer for 8 years, and then Steve Bullock for the past 7 to 8 years. What would Montana look like if we had a Republican governor during the past 16 years? And what would it look like? What would be different if we had a Democratic majority in the legislature? Maybe present two different pictures of what Montana might look like under one-party control.
So right now the composition of the legislature is in the House, so those 100 seats, it's 58 Republicans, 42 Democrats. In the Senate, it's 30 Republicans, 20 Democrats. We would have to win 5 seats to find parity in the Senate, you know, 8 seats in the House. This is what we struggle with, and this is what we work towards every election. You can know that Gallatin was the most successful county in the last election in 2018. We added a House and a Senate seat to the Montana legislature. So we inched closer to parity, inched. We have miles to go. We could talk about this for a long, long time, what it would look like. But if you take just one thing right now, COVID, and you think about how social services are going right now, increase mental health need, increase access to affordable, quality, timely health care, those are promoted. So the Democrats, we're often slammed that, you know, we don't have easy slogans. Well, here's a slogan. We're for people and planet first. And that's what we stand for, people and planet first. When you think about those risks and those benefits and the need for putting people and planet first right now, it would be social services and the protection of what we have in Montana as our environment. On the other side, I think it's easily summed up in money and things that promote business and I don't want to say business interests, because it's not really. We have a lot of people that are own small businesses, are small business people, but not big magnets of wealth and power. You know, people that have means in the Democratic Party are still putting people and planet first. And in the legislature, when you put people and planet first, that means that you're thinking about social programs, you're thinking about education, you make healthcare a priority. We were lucky to pass Medicaid expansion. We were lucky, skillful, and intentional to repass it again in the last session, and it's greatly benefited Montana.
Give us a sense of how. I mean, what in terms of human impacts, what would be happening to some Montanans if that had not passed, Elizabeth?
Well, thank you for asking. I was on a Zoom call last night, and I found out this fun fact. So Montana's population is roughly, we have the highest demographic of U.S. Military veterans. It's about 10%. It has been about 10%, you know, just all along. But of those veterans, how many are registered with the VA? 48%.
Wow.
You know where the rest of them get their health care? Private insurance, but a lot get Medicaid and use that Medicaid. Students that I serve at the university, you know, they come in and I say, are you on the university health plan? And they go, no, I'm on Medicaid. I go, you're welcome, because I worked on that for a long, long time and I'm very proud of it. Mm-hmm. But it's It's little things like that. And I was in a meeting the other day, and we were talking about the goals for the Planning Coordination Committee for the next phase. And I brought up affordable housing, because if we don't bring it up in the planning stage at the beginning, it always ends up as an afterthought and it's forgotten. But when we did those listening sessions, guess who wasn't in the room? Guess who was working their two or three jobs? Guess who doesn't have a chance to pay attention to politics? It's people who need affordable housing, people who need access to food, people who have had their driver's license pulled because they got a DUI and need public transportation, people who don't have a functional car and need to get to work but need that job. So these are the people that Democrats are looking out for, mindful of, because we know that it takes all of us to move this society forward and to keep this society in a compassionate way.
Yeah, hear, hear. The whole policy program is based on compassion. I think that's what you're saying about the slogan "People and Planet First." That is to say that the interests of common people in having a decent life, right, the quality of life, is the interest of the Democratic Party. And yeah, I think that's a wonderful way of cutting into the whole notion. So you said that Montana has a disproportionate number of veterans in its general population, and that veterans are also making use of the services provided through government to support their lives.
And they've earned them.
Yeah, absolutely, they've earned them.
Man, they paid for
absolutely.
Them, unlike the rest of us.
Yeah. Do you feel that the sort of the time is at hand for the Democratic Party, that these issues are now raising to the surface, so that it's becoming almost an undeniable fact that we should be providing more services for ourselves, right? That's one of the principal functions of government, and that we should be coming around to that? Because Montana, as everybody knows, it's been pegged as a libertarian state, right? Also a notorious ticket-splitting state.
Yeah.
We'll go Republican in the national elections, and we'll go Democrat in the state, and vice versa. We split tickets for some reason, and we have that sort of libertarian notion of freedom. And so even though you're telling me that veterans are very knowledgeable about services and use those services to their benefit, there's still a dominant ethos, it seems to me, in this state that freedom should come first, and that freedom means freedom from the government. But the government is what's providing the services that help us to live, but we need to be free from the government. That seems to be almost a schizoidal position
to
be in.
That's gone on for decades.
Yeah, I feel like that's the Montana character in a way,
yeah,
right?
Hands off my Medicare, hands off my health care, but I want my Medicare.
And so my question is not, have you noticed that? My question is, have you noticed that weakening? Have you noticed that maybe there's a budge in that mentality, and that we could be moving toward a more sort of embrace of the beneficial potential role of government in our lives?
Steve, I'm an optimist by nature, but when it comes to politics, I'm a pessimist. So
tisk tisk.
So though I might notice something, I live in my own. I live with the media that I see,
mm-hmm.
the limits of who I interact with,
mm-hmm.
and the voices I hear. And I don't want to be pulled off my game to be distracted into thinking that I don't, and the Gallatin Democrats don't, have to work very, very hard for every forward movement that we make.
Mm-hmm. But Gallatin County has, in fact, made forward strides from the point of view of a Democrat.
Yes,
right?
We have.
When I grew up here, it was solidly Republican, all the way down, top to bottom of the ticket. And now it seems like it's a reliably purple to bluish kind of county.
There, the city,
at least
the Bozeman core is, for the most part, blue to purple.
We went Bullock twice, right?
Yeah, and we elected Tester. We got him an extra 12,000 votes.
And even Yellowstone County is starting to shift a little bit, because
Yellowstone is in trouble, but they need help. But maybe again, this is you've hit my pessimistic acupuncture point.
Yeah, well, I don't have my license in acupuncture, so that'll happen.
Got to work on that.
Yeah. So, in other words, you're not seeing a shift in the mentality, in the sort of libertarianism that says government bad.
I'm very cautious. I'm very cautious until the votes are counted, and we don't even know that that's going to be on November 4th or 5th.
Yeah, I think apparently Trump's numbers are still pretty high here. Like, if you compare the number of people who are favorably disposed toward Trump to the people who are unfavorable toward Trump, that margin of difference is 20. So 20% more people are favorably disposed to him than are unfavorable toward him, which is the highest margin in the country.
Hmm. Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So before we kind of get into the hot button issues around national politics, I was curious to get your thoughts, you know, other than the governor's race and state legislative seats that most people have some familiarity with, what are some of the other offices that people don't pay as much attention to necessarily in Montana and in most states that are where people are still making really important decisions that impact people's lives?
Well, my very, very favorite office, obviously, is County Commission, because according to, you know, Futures West, there or other people who have spoken on their behalf, they're the most important people in the Rocky Mountain West. So if you're talking about planning, growth, analysis, livable communities, affordable housing, et cetera,
social services, justice,
all that stuff, transportation, infrastructure, clean water, air, it's County Commission. So I love good county commissioners, or fair county commissioners, or just people that are willing to listen and do. But then the statewide, underneath the governor, there are five, the governor and four other members compose the land board. And they're called the Tier Bs, or the statewide electeds. And that is the Secretary of State. So voting rights, business licenses, etc. The auditor is Securities and Exchange and health insurance, and so health care. The Office of Public Instruction, and that would be like schools K through 12, and then which one am I? Oh, Attorney General, our watchdog to keep our laws and keep us safe within the laws.
So let's talk a little bit about some of those individual offices. Like, since you just mentioned Attorney General, what does the Attorney General do that impacts people's lives? Why should Montanans care who's in that position?
Oh, we should care a lot, because they defend the people. So just as the Department of Justice is supposed to defend the people of the United States, the Attorney General in Montana is supposed to defend and be the watchdog for you and I. If the state of Montana is breaking laws, they're the watchdog of that. They're not cronies of the government. They're the watchdog for the people. Rafe Grabel is an amazing candidate, and he's running against a very partisan man from eastern Montana. I think even within his own party, this is the puzzling thing about the Republican Party right now, is that they've caused rifts even within their own party. My objective as chair of the Gallatin Democrats is to make sure that we're together, united, and that we can discuss things well, debate them civilly and with respect, and then move on and stay together. There are some real sharp partisans, and one within that statewide race is the Attorney General on the Republican side.
What are some specific examples? Sorry to put you on the spot. If you're, this may be a little tough to just pull out of thin air, but is there a case that comes to mind from recent years where the Attorney General played an important role in serving the interests of Montanans, and where?
I'm not your brightest legal mind, but I do remember stream access as being one of the things that Bullock ran on when he before he became governor. And I mean, that's giant, because we've been impacted by that time and time again with places on the Cherry River or down around the beautiful streams in southwest Montana. That comes to mind.
Or even the East Gallatin, where it ambles by Greg Gianforte's property.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. Yep.
So you mentioned Secretary of State also, and obviously right now voting rights and disenfranchisement are a huge topic nationally. What's going on in Montana and on that front? Do you feel good about the laws Montana has in place? Has the Democratic Party been engaged in voting rights issues?
Yeah.
Sounds like the answer is probably yes.
Yes, yes and yes. But I do have to mention Bryce Bennett. He's a wonderful man. He's an exceptional candidate. He is so well seasoned to take that position and really be the servant of us. And we're paying his salary, so he is a true public servant. But when you mention voting rights, I mean, the Republican Party funded the Green Party initiative to put their candidates on the ballot. This is not the first time that they've done that, and the Montana Democratic Party defended that, brought a suit, defended it in court, and they're off the ballot. They were foisting a Green Party challenger to split the ticket. That's the logic. Aside from that, we have wonderful clerks and recorders throughout the state. Now, they run as Democrats and Republicans in some counties. In our county, they do. But they don't have to, and it's a technical, nonpartisan position, like a lot of the county positions. But they do, in some cases, and in Gallatin County, they do run as partisans. But for the most part, these guys are just public servants that want to get the job done. So I think it was a couple of weeks ago, the county clerks and recorders sent a letter to Governor Bullock and said, we want to vote by mail. We want to make it an option to have a mostly mail-in ballot. It's not going to be all mail-in ballot. I don't think anywhere in the state. And the county will decide on that in a few weeks. But
and I have a question, if I can just butt in for a second.
Sure.
There's also been, I just saw in the news, and I can't recall the details of the story, but some kind of discussion around poll watching and parties showing up, or any individual showing up and hanging out at the place where votes are being cast by people, right? In person, going to the gymnasium, going to the facility to cast their vote. And the rules about poll watching, apparently, I think it was the Trump administration wanted to loosen those rules so that there could be more people hanging around the polls, which is frightening, right? This notion that people are going to be intimidated, people are going to be too afraid to stay in line, they'll be shooed away from exercising their right to vote.
Also, just jamming up the works, I think, is probably the even bigger threat. If they can repeatedly challenge votes in minority-heavy voting districts and slow down the process and make the lines too long, that's by itself going to disenfranchise people, right?
Is there any such thing happening in the state of Montana? Or are our poll watching rules going to be the same old ones we've had before, where you're supposed to maintain a certain distance, right? Isn't it something like 300 feet?
Yeah, it is 300 feet. It's 100 yards. Yeah, and that's challenged. I mean, it's we've had people out electioneering on the day of the election, just at 301 feet. You know.
Mm-hmm.
They can do that. They cannot be inside. I've been a poll watcher. I was there in 2016 for the presidential from, 7 a.m. till 7:30, 7:45 p.m.
Sounds fun.
It's a long day and it's hard. And you really do, it is buttoned down. You really do have to pay attention. And you have to be respectful of the people that are running that election. So the election judges, and they can kick you out, and they should. Are we going to have squirrely bad behavior? We don't know. These are some of the things that we find out on the ground the day of, and we can have the best processes in place and the best people as election judges, but it's not going to preclude bad behavior on the part of a few bad people. So that's just kind of the way it goes.
And so in terms of voting rights, are there other concerns that apply here in Montana, Elizabeth?
I was recently informed that we've had varying degrees of help and assistance on election day and throughout the election season from volunteer attorneys who come in from other states, perhaps, or have volunteered here, and they just make sure that everyone has the right to vote. So those processes are in place now with the Montana Democratic Party, and frankly, I'm really proud of them and supportive of that effort, because we don't know what those challenges are going to be. And if these people, six or seven attorneys paying attention to Montana, who have deep experience on voter participation, then good for us. Good for us across the state. And, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of problem.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully we'll prevent problems from happening and stop them before they're a real problem.
Right.
Give us a sense of, for the people that you're familiar with who've decided to run for office within the Democratic Party, what drives them to get engaged, and whether, you know, someone's Democrat, Republican, Libertarian, otherwise, what should people think about if they've, you know, previously sat on the sidelines and might have some thought of getting involved in the process? What kind of advice would you give them on what support is out there to get engaged, and what should someone know about perhaps getting involved in running for any office?
These are my heroes. It's hard, hard work. It takes a lot of work. It takes planning, care, a team, money. Money's not first. And, okay, so Emily's list years ago, and I think it's still accurate today because I heard it just recently, says that women have to be asked to run for office 7 times. So why are there fewer women candidates? Because they're not being asked. Why do men step up and go, I'm going to be U.S. Senator? And then decide, well, maybe if that doesn't work out, I can be a House District Representative in the Montana House, which would promote and put forward my goals anyway of good state government, good policy, good management. It's probably, we have, I think, 6 brand new first-time candidates in Gallatin County this time. One is Sandy Earhart for Gallatin Clerk and Recorder. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get these wrong, so I got to go off my mess because it's...
Well, tell you what, while you're doing that, I got to throw in our station ID here.
Okay.
I want to remind listeners that you are listening to The View from here on 95.9 FM KGVM in Bozeman, serving the Gallatin County and beyond.
And thank you for hosting us. So Alice Buckley in House District 63, Brian Popiel in 64, Kelly Cordham in 65, Colette Campbell in 67, and now Emily Broston in 68. Each of these is a first-time candidate, so none of them have run on a campaign before. Some of them have been on the edges of them. It's a lot of work. And the people who have been taken a front seat and watched another candidate run a campaign, they're in a better position to assess what they need and how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to tell you, Emily Broston just took over as our candidate for House District 68, and she's going to come out swinging against Caleb Hinkle. She's put together a team. She's a smart, competent young woman, and she's running for the right reason. But each one of these people decides how they're going to run a campaign. Is it going to be grassroots? Like right now, it is just insanely hard to figure out how to campaign because we don't have like the knocking doors, the going door to door. At the early stage, people were answering their phones, so you could call them and talk with them about candidates. Now it's like, nope. So it's getting harder and harder. And as the time decreases, the pressure increases. So these last few months, it's going to be nuts. And it is going to be like a pressure cooker. We're going to start seeing ads everywhere, mailers, etc. It's just pay attention. But mostly for voters, it's go to gallatindemocrats.org, find the candidates there, each one of their websites is connected to that candidate page, and you can get good information straight from the horse's mouth, not misunderstandings or bad information.
So, Elizabeth, I'm also interested for more kind of neutral news sources for people who may be, you know, green, libertarian, Republican, who want to get an overall picture of the candidates and choices. I know Montana Free Press is one good online news source that gives information about all of the candidates for each elected office in this state, at least at the state level. Are there other information sources that you're aware of to recommend on that front on a more neutral basis?
Well, Yellowstone and Montana Public Radio. Media Matters puts out this chart that rates the veracity of news sources. Mm-hmm. And it's just a wonderful chart, and I think that they update it every 6 months. And if you go to the middle and the top tier, you find the most reliable news sources. AP is reliable. The public radio stations, Montana Free Press is wonderful. And I know that people slam the local papers, the Lees, the Gannett's, the Bozeman Chronicle for being too left, too right. But I mean, honestly, these guys work hard. They have challenging jobs and they do the best that they can. It's read those articles and not...
Go ahead. Looking kind of more at the national picture for a few minutes, I realize, you know, you're not a representative of the National Democratic Party, but I'm curious, as someone who's on the progressive side myself, it seems like the National Party is consistently, you know, well to the right of the mainstream of its support. And, you know, just yesterday's news had the roster for the Democrats' National Convention, including current Republicans, former Republicans, Bill and Hillary Clinton all having prominent speaking slots. What I would consider the most
future
of the energy is in the party in the future, you know, young people of color especially. I'm only aware of one. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez got a one minute spot on the agenda, while these, you know, amongst, I mentioned the people I'm referring to, John Kasich, Michael Bloomberg, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, you know, all white, and the youngest of the lot, I believe, is 68 amongst that group. So I'm kind of wondering, given the last election, where running a very centrist corporate candidate in Hillary Clinton did not work out particularly well, why is there such a, from my perspective, disconnect between the base of the party and what the Democratic National Committee is doing that's not there on the Republican side? The Republican side very much focuses on turning out their base and appealing to their base, and the Democrats seem to be chasing this, whether it exists or not, this white suburban undecided voter who doesn't know whether or not they want to keep Donald Trump in office or...
That's a real nail-biting decision, right? Isn't it? I don't know. Can you imagine like not having your mind made up yet?
I think those people are a lot more aware than they admit, or that they'll admit to people taking polls and demographics.
Why are they? I realize you can't speak center? For the National Party, but do you agree with that kind of disconnect? And any thoughts on that?
I think it's a lack of courage, honestly. I think it's really, it's wanting to be too centrist, thinking that you're gonna move a couple votes from leaning Republican or independent or unknown to, a split ticket voters that's gonna vote for people on the Democratic side, whether it be the governor or in Montana, like Steve said earlier. You know, we're famous for splitting the ticket. You know, a Secretary of State, a governor, here or there sprinkled in. why do they move in that direction? It's, you may not know this about me, but I don't pay a lot of attention to the national politics. People asked me even last week, who do you think Joe Biden should pick as his running mate? And I was like, I don't know, and I don't really care. I really, really, really am concerned about the politics and the office holders that we have and that we can access more closely, and that's our local electeds. So money is spent on the federal level. It's distributed on the state level. But where is it spent? It's spent on the local level. And we have better communication friendlier relationships, deeper relationships with our local electeds, city commissioners, library board members who are volunteers, planning board members, parks boards members, where we have influence, the city commissioners, the sheriff, the county attorney, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the national has to follow our local, as far as I'm concerned, and they're just not doing that. And we have to push them to pay attention to us. First, we have to win this election. And then, the day after the election and all the votes are counted, what do we need to do? We need to push those people we have elected to really move policy in a direction that favors us. Mm-hmm. And by us, I mean like most of us, 90% of us. We know that that very wealthy people who have bought influence and power don't need any more representation. It's the rest of us that do. So if you're thinking about that 10%, they're not people you're seeing at the airport. They're not even people you're seeing in the first class seats at the airport. They're the people that are using their private jets. We don't see them, and they don't run in our circles. So we need, we're better off building government policy and community from the ground up. And it is the mission and the core value of the Gallatin Democrats to push from the bottom up while the large campaigns come in and work from the top down. And that's how we get it all.
So given the challenges right now that we have with the COVID pandemic and the inability of candidates and volunteers to go door to door to have those individual conversations, is there, what can take the place of that in terms of building grassroots engagement and energy? It seems like a huge challenge.
It is really hard. So it's, the best we can do is introduce our candidates by Zoom or some sort of electronic means. I do think that it's not as easy and safe to go door to door. I've done it. I did it a couple weekends ago in Belgrade. And it's fun. I love going door to door. It's my favorite thing to do. But I am just...
Well, it takes all kinds, doesn't it, Elizabeth?
I know it does. I know. But I like meeting my neighbors. But I just don't think it's going to be viable. And especially as when schools start, if we see the increases in the COVID numbers, we really have to pay attention to that. Right. An RNA, little strand that's a virus doesn't care if we're Democrats or Republicans. They're just going for a host. They're just trying to find a host to which grow and stuff like that. So we have to be smarter than the virus, and that means politicking in a different way and bringing our candidates to light in different ways. And I hope that we are able to do that through Zoom, text, social media. I don't know. I wish I had millions of ideas and lots of answers. We're doing the best we can.
Strange times indeed.
We're rolling out new tools in the next 2 weeks too, for the Gallatin Democrats.
Rolling out new tools.
We haven't voted on it yet, so I don't want to bring it up. But it passed the executive committee, and new online and digital tools. I do too.
I feel that this is just a very disturbing moment. We can't even get the politicking out.
Right, I know it's overused, but it's the most important election of our lifetimes. I mean, really, democracy hinges upon it, and it's our government. And I think, I myself feel, tremendous responsibility for my government, the government that I pay for, that you pay for, that serves us all.
Something very, seems to me, sort of a silver lining, a hopeful thing, getting back into your wheelhouse, which is local politics. Candidate Zach Brown for the Gallatin County Commission seems to be, from my point of view, a real winner, right?
And if you can get him on there with Seth, wouldn't there, that would be a two-person majority for...
Scott, I'm sorry.
Yeah. With Scott McFarlane, you could have a two-person majority, and you would see, I think, greater protections of our land resources, a greater awareness of transportation networks, and of, like, wanting to hem in development from its current willy-nilly chaotic state, and bring some order to what's happening in, on the ground, to the ground, and to the water in Gallatin County. So can you say a little bit about Zach Brown and his candidacy?
I think Zach is an exceptional. He's a wonderful candidate. I don't think that he came to this easily. He thought long and hard. He really considered the running for county commission versus another opportunity that was before him. I actually think it's the heart of the public servant that drew him to this, and he's well seasoned. You know, having worked in One Montana with rural America and rural Montana and the urban-rural divide, economic development, I've had some good discussions with Zach. My son went to school with him, and you know, from leadership as the president of the Associated Students of the University of Montana to a legislator for three terms, to working with One Montana. He comes with a tremendous amount of experience for such a young individual. And he's got the right ethic and a wonderful temperament. Because, I mean, a lot of these jobs, legislator in particular, county commissioner, you're sitting in an awful lot of meetings. You're doing an awful lot of listenings. You're reading a lot of papers. Some of this is, it's not the excitement of the pulpit, the bully pulpit that we see. It's nitty-gritty work on the ground at your desk or with individuals, with the public. Right.
And also having a foundation, a value system.
Right.
And it seems to me that the little that I know about Zach is that he does.
He does,
yeah,
absolutely.
My major concern is, of course, growth and development. It's always been my major concern as an individual. And when I see some of his campaign literature, it seems that he shares that. And I like the idea that he wants to support agricultural producers. I don't know when the last time was that I heard a Gallatin County Commissioner talk about it quite the way that he does. Because rampant development, although it does serve the needs of those landowners who would like to sell into development, leaves high and dry, literally dry, because of the disappearance of irrigation canals, for example, because of a new subdivision. Yeah. Other people who would like to be remain producers, expand their operations. And so I love that way into the issue because it sort of breaks up the logjam that has been established in Gallatin County, that those who are from the rural parts of the county, those who are producers are libertarian, right? Mm-hmm. And they don't want the government to do anything. If I want to develop, then I can develop. If I want to stay in production, I'll stay in production, but no one should mess. I think what he's doing is he's saying that if you want to stay in production, then you have to be concerned about development. Mm-hmm. And as a rural producer, you can no longer sit back and be libertarian because the libertarianism is actually going to end up undermining your goals. If you can get that message across, that would be really lovely.
Well, you know, he's had a great relationship with Aggie, the ag irrigators in Gallatin County, and a deep relationship with them for a long time. With the Planning Coordinating Committee, we were really, really lucky to have a lot of input from Aggie too. But the curious thing about Zach running for county commission is that he's not a large landowner. The three commissioners that we had on for a long time were large landowners and some with ranches or farming.
Some who had developed their properties in whole or in part themselves, right? And there's always been a very pro-development notion. They back their way into it. They might not say they're pro-development, but they're anti-regulation, which ends up being the same thing.
Yeah.
in our last couple of minutes, just wanted to ask you, Elizabeth, what was your background like in terms of working with the Montana Organizing Project and the other organizing work that you did in the past that led you into getting involved in party politics?
Well, I deeply appreciate my time with Montana Organizing Project and the organizations that sponsored us and sponsored my work before I came to them, because I was really able to hone some tools and some skills and learn what matters and how to make it happen. And when there was a lack of leadership here in Gallatin County, I thought, I'd worked in marketing for a long time, and I thought, okay, this is just the complement of marketing and community organizing, and I had more skills, deeper skills to make this position work. And although it's in a year like this, it takes a lot of time and a lot of kind of soul searching. It's hugely important to me that we listen, that we be approachable, that we be diverse and inclusive, and that we get our folks elected, because this is policy is governed by politics. Politics is often hated, but it brings the policies that affect us every day. So access to good, clean, healthy air and water, access to education, access to health care, access to family values that support us all, and where we can prosper instead of Montana being the fifth highest in the nation of people working two or more jobs for low, low wages. We will have time, perhaps, to take a day off, to have vacation, to have the freedom of health and access to health so we can function, we can work. Access to education. Things that make us livable human beings and a livable society.
Thanks, Elizabeth. It's been a pleasure having you on the show this week.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for coming in, and thank you for all the great work that you do for the people of Gallatin County and the students at Montana State University.
Yeah. Thanks for hosting me. I appreciate it.
Once again, you've been listening to The View from Here on KGVM 95.9 FM in Bozeman, serving the Gallatin Valley and beyond, and online at kgvm.org. We'll see you next time on The View from Here.